Congratulations. You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Mason Laszlo.
And I'll tell ya, if there's one thing that this podcast can claim to be number one at, it's recording difficulties. If you're listening to this stateside, you know that the U.S. is very different from Norway, and that the government doesn't protect any commons for anyone, and everything's owned by corporations.
What Kate's trying to say is that this is your last week to donate to the OmniCommons fundraiser. There's actually a great write-up about the OmniCommons in the East Bay Express this week.
Which we'll link to that and their website, which is omnicommons.org. We'll have links to all this stuff in the link world. But point is, if you're some kind of rich motherfucker,
if you are sitting on a couple million dollars in excess, give it to the OmniCommons.
At 22,000 square feet, this large and flexible space can support the collaboration of many different groups working on a variety of projects and ideals.
Free classes and workshops, commercial kitchen, bike shop, a media lab, tools ranging from basic power tools, 3D printers, electronics,
robots,
sewing station with heavy-duty sewing machines, print studio, free Wi-Fi, weekly film nights, yoga classes, gatherings with food and music and dancing, and a variety of spaces available for the community.
Yay! At least, if nothing else, I finally got Maysoon on board.
Oh, I've been on board.
All right, this week we interviewed Oakland-based artist Cassie Thornton, whose work is a lot about debt. So after you listen to this podcast and that interview, if it's still Monday, January 26th, you should head over to the David Brower Center in Berkeley. And at 7:30 p.m., Caroline Woolard is going to be giving a talk titled, What is a Work of Art in the Age of $120,000 Art Degrees? I'm going to try to go.
Sounds good.
So maybe you'll see me there. I don't know. I'll hug people. I don't give a fuck.
Even if they sneak up on you?
I mean, I might freak out a little bit and scream. We're here at Farley's in the parklet.
Farley's East.
On the street. This is going to be a new soundscape. We're here talking to Oakland-based artist Cassie Thornton.
Hi, everybody.
Cassie, can you tell us about yourself as an artist?
I have been doing artwork around debt and economics for what seems like ever. I like to think about revealing the elephant in the room. And so that elephant has been debt for a while. But I'm interested in all kinds of elephants. I really love combining like hardcore economic analysis with something closer to like witchcraft and revealing that there's available powers for regular people to sort of change, to kind of like fuck with really big forces like money and security and things that shape our lives. One of the first projects I did about debt was debt visualizations. So when I was getting my MFA and everybody had so much debt and everybody, bless you, wanted to be such a professional, I thought maybe the relationship between this desire to be professional and competitive and make money had a lot to do with the pressures of putting yourself in so much debt. So I wanted to just think about this relationship between the debt and the art. And so what I started to say to people was that, I mean, I estimated that we had like $4 million of debt in my graduating class. And how much art would we have to make an equivalent amount of art to $40 million of debt? And so are we really making debt? Are we really making art? And so then I thought, oh, it would be really amazing to make like an infographic that showed, that revealed like the scale of art to debt. So I wanted to make something really big, but I didn't know what I would make debt out of. So I started to ask people what debt would look like, and it turned into this whole thing where people were talking to me about the physicality of debt for them. And so then I made it into more of a meditative, like, hypnotherapeutic process where people would close their eyes and, you know, imagine themselves in a familiar outdoor space and describe this sort of quest to find debt. And I would give them sort of superpowers. They could imagine themselves seeing through walls or flying or anything they wanted, really. And they'd find this thing, this unknown thing, and then when they decided that that was their debt, they could interact with it. And there began to be, like, all these tropes, like certain people. A lot of people saw fog. A lot of people saw big metallic objects coming out of the earth, poisoning the soil. Some of those pieces looked sort of like Richard Serra pieces. But all of them had really specific qualities that revealed something about the person's relationship to debt or money. So like fog, you can try to move it, but you can never capture it. You could push it around, but it always kind of comes back. But it really changes your perception of things. And so it became a project that I've been doing since 2011. So it's 4 years, and now I can really tell what people are like. There's tropes of what people see, and I can kind of place people's economic relationships based on what they see pretty easily now.
Have you been able to track how people's conception of debt changes over time?
Like an individual's person over time? I really haven't. I mean,
or your own even.
Yeah, I would love. Maybe I should like go back to mine again. Mine was very much of like an infinite pile of dirt that there. Basically, in my visualization, I saw. I realized that all cities had a municipal swimming pool scale tub hidden somewhere that had this really fine, high quality dirt, and that was where the debt was stored, and you could jump in and swim around in it. And that it was this, like, very... But it was interesting because it smelled really good. It was this really rich soil. And in the process of my visualization, I turned into two selves. And we both jumped around in it, and it was pretty interesting. But anyway... So I haven't really tracked people specifically over time, because a lot of people were like one-time kinds of people that, you know, contacted me in the middle of the night out of nowhere. But then a lot of them, the first ones I did were my friends. And I think that they've told me over time the way that the imagination of debt stayed with them. Like one person saw a huge metal marble that was always in the periphery of her vision. But whenever she looked at it, it would move. But it was just always in the room. And she says that she still, like, she uses that. That's kind of how she imagines her, like, bill coming. It's sort of, yeah. And whenever I see a metal ball, I think of her. And I think that that's her debt. I'm like, that's 84K.
Yeah.
So then another thing that you do, I just was wondering, because you also do a lot of work with strike debt. And then I wonder if you think of that as a continuation of your art practice, or if you think of that as something separate, because it is a very serious political work. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and your art is a very political work also, but I feel like strike debt, especially like the call for the mass default movement.
Well, yeah, most of my work is in relation to strike debt, I think. I think that for me, a large rupture in behavior, like everyone deciding to default on their debts at the same time, it takes such a massive amount of sort of psychic change. It's like the biggest mental hurdle it's a very big mental hurdle to sort of like shift the idea of debt as a moral obligation into something much simpler, like a political decision. So most of my work is about trying to find ways to affect the psychic space that fears and kind of holds sacred the economy and those structures. And so the political work, in my mind, it is going to take so long and take so many forms of support in order to make any of those really big dreams come true of getting people to live beyond their credit score and to exist with different kinds of exchange and to not live in a corporate megalomania and to strike debt. It will take so long to achieve some of those goals that I think all tactics are useful, but I'm most interested in the way that we embody our debts and the way that those affect what we believe is possible and really affecting that psychic space, which I think is just so precious and tiny, and or not precious and tiny, but kind of underneath everything. And I feel like I'm just kind of learning how to be in that space with my art practice.
I did want to ask you how you're thinking about the sort of tech boom in the area and how that's impacting people financially, how that plays into your work, I guess, or what you're thinking about.
Or especially because you were living in New York before you came out here, right, to go to CCA?
Well, in New York, I felt very aware of a ticking time bomb where I would have to leave New York because eventually I'd be priced out because... You know, I just want to live in a way where my life is not about making money, but it's about all the things that you would make money for, or, you know, like, I just want to be alive. And so I knew that I would eventually get priced out of New York, and then I came to San Francisco, and I moved straight to the Mission thinking that I was going to have, like, a really woo-woo California experience with a yard and, like, birds singing and planting herbs and stuff. And that was so not the case. And in fact, like, you know, I was pushed out of my apartment after 3 years. And I witnessed the solidification of an understanding of gentrification as this, you know, really complex and dangerous thing that meant that as a place gets nice, it becomes a place that I can't live anymore. Like, we all have that feeling. I think it really does sort of narrow our sense of belonging, you know, like to constantly be trained that as soon as you get comfortable in a place and there's like the amenities that you need to have what seems like a regular life, that means that you're just on the brink of being priced out. I think that would be a really interesting thing to explore in terms of like an unconscious landscape of possibility and impossibility. And I would love to talk to techies and to think about with them what the cost to their psyche is. Like, how does it feel to walk around feeling like a wolf?
But you know a lot of tech people, like full-on, full-blown software people.
Yeah, yeah.
Half software, half person.
fully just like with their hands in like just in the sparkling condominiums that cost $16,000 a month or whatever. Also, I cater, and so most of my catering jobs, I wear all black, and I cater for government dignitaries and tech people and the UC system and all of these people, and I get to witness the sort of reality of being a part of an undercommons. I don't know if you guys have read this amazing book called The Undercommons by Fred Moten and Stefano Harney, but it's this amazing description of a place where you go, where basically we all are sort of priced out of the same desires that are the sort of mainstream desires when you're like... rejecting the basic structures of, like, you know, participation, but especially those that are associated with race and class and debt, and but it's this place of sort of like at times of invisibility, and for him it's a place of power, but I'm definitely feeling this sort of sense of like what it is to be invisible. As a caterer working to serve and make happy the people that are really on the front lines of, like, our cities.
I think you covered pretty much everything I was going to ask about.
Can I tell you what my new project is?
Yeah,
oh, please do.
It's such a quagmire. So I am doing alternative credit reports.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Give me cred.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I really want to do them for everybody, but especially for people that are looking for apartments and jobs that have bad, like, records in some way, like a bad credit report, or if you just don't have a rental history, you don't have a job history in the thing you're applying for, if what's on the books is not a complete story of you, but is keeping you from doing, like, the most basic things in life, I am doing these reports, and I find it to be like the most wonderful process ever. And I have people show me their actual credit reports from Experian or whatever, and their resume usually, and then I take some time to mull it over, and then I interview them about everything besides that stuff, or every, like, the story behind it, like, everything from their family to, like, just, you know, why they made the decisions they made, and just what was the story underneath all of these documents and these numbers, and I make it into a one-page PDF, and then they can use that, you know, to give along with their credit report if they're looking for an apartment or whatever. And it works. It's worked.
Oh, damn. People actually used it to get shit? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it worked.
And I want to make a collection of these that you can look through so that you can see. Because what's really interesting is that there's a lot of patterns that come up. Like, given, like, if you do a bunch of people from the same city that are about the same age, like, we can kind of see an ebb and flow happening of, like, sort of, like, a socioeconomic wave that everybody's riding, but nobody can see that they're all a part of it because they're so far in it. It seems like personal crises. And so I want to put all of them together eventually. But in the meantime, I'm always at First Fridays taking appointments, and then we just schedule the appointments, and then I do them outside of there. And I will be taking appointments, and we'll be doing some readings of the alternative credit reports at this event at the lab on March 8th. It's going to be a justice and labor and education festival to celebrate the organizing of all the adjunct unions.
Awesome. And we'll have links to all that in the underworld. Congratulations.
This week, Kate went to the Battery,
which is a secret club. Maysoon, did you know about this?
Yes.
Honestly, the only reason I knew about this at all is because when we interviewed Christian Frock, I know I had heard about it, maybe from an article that Christian had written, or I don't know, somebody. And I'm like, what the fuck is this place? It sounds like hell.
Right, it sure does. It's basically a private social club, or obviously it's a social club.
Yeah, it's like a country club without tennis courts.
And it's like invitation only to all their events, but they have a whole art program where they curate shows and lectures and public programs and this and that. But you have to be invited to it. I don't know if there's a password or anything that's collected at the door, but...
See, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking this was going to be, like, Eyes Wide Shut status. You go in, and people are just, like, rich white guys in suits, smoking cigars, like, throwing gold coins at poor people.
Oh, my God.
Right? Who, like, have to dance for them. That's basically what I thought it was going to be.
I didn't have such a... My imagination didn't go quite so far.
And so when I went there, I waited for my friend Jenny Sheriff, who was the one who was kind of getting me in. And nobody even checked shit. We just breezed right in. No. Nobody gave a damn. The people there were young, and like, it was a pretty diverse crowd that I saw.
Was it?
Yeah, like people... at least racially diverse. I didn't check everybody's like bank account. Or their age. They were young people. Anyhow, and then we get up to Amy Franceschini and Desiree Holman. We're going to be giving talks, just, you know, standard artist talks. Apparently it was... Amy at least got asked to do it because she got a grant from the Acadia Foundation many years ago. They don't give grants anymore, and I don't think they have since 2013, at least not to, like, individual artists or artist groups or whatever. Which is too bad because according to Amy, it was like all you do is send images. You don't have to write anything. And then they give you a check. No questions asked.
What?
And you can. That's what she said. I was expecting to be totally disgusted by this place and have people like insult me as soon as I walked in.
God, you're so extreme, Kate.
But it was actually a pretty pleasant experience. I mean, the place is weird. It's like some weird interior designer gone mad.
Well, what's their business? Like, what are they, you know, who are they? What are they making their money off of? They're clearly not charging for events and stuff.
Well, what I saw was their restaurant was jam-packed. There was nobody anywhere else. There was also, like, live music happening, but it was in this really tiny room. And there were only, like, maybe 15 people at the artist talk. You know, so it seems like their restaurant's their big moneymaker. But I don't know. I don't know if they have secret dungeon rooms where they're keeping all their child prostitutes.
Oh, my God. I just don't understand why it's like, why they're billing it as a private club. I mean, is that really what people want to be participating in? I just fucking hate that idea so much. Even if it's like an okay experience overall. I think that's why I've had such a hard time going myself. I've gotten lots of invitations from the director of the art program. And they're bringing in great artists, but great local artists. But I just can't, I have not yet been convinced to go, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. It was definitely weird. I don't understand that impulse to want to, like, I have so much money, I can go to this club where only rich people go.
Yeah.
I really don't know either. And part of the reason I was expecting it to be so horrible is because I read, like, reviews about it on Yelp. But anyhow, so part of the reason I was
so
concerned
you can
about
say
going.
There were some interesting stories about that.
Yeah, there were some. I'll post their Yelp.
Their Yelp page, you can find some interesting stories about
that. So that's why I was freaking out. But man, when we went there, I mean, maybe it was just perfect to be seeing Amy and Desiree doing talks because, I don't know, I love their work. And they, you know, Desiree was maybe the first lecture I saw when I came to grad school at Mills. And so, I don't know, maybe I was just in a sentimental place. Amy Franceschini, whose work is like, you know, very like political and socially engaged, mm-hmm. mainly about like farming and food justice. Mm-hmm. She gave her talk, and then before her like standard artist talk, she asked everyone in the audience, okay, who has lived in San Francisco the longest? Mm-hmm. And there were like maybe two people that had been living there for more than like 25 years, mm-hmm. and they were both born in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And she gave each of them like an artist book that was like a party favor. And then she found the two people that had been living there the least amount of time, uh-huh. which I forget what the exact time was, but it was like less than a year, I think. And she gave to those people an artist book. And then she didn't really say anything about it, and then gave her a talk. And then at the Q&A, somebody asked her, like, why'd you choose that indicator?
Yeah.
And she got really emotional, and she got kind of weepy, and she was just saying, like, that she's lived here for a long time. And it's just hard right now because it's getting to the point where it's like, can I really afford to live here anymore? Mm-hmm. And she wants to be welcoming to new people that are coming, but she wants them to be aware of what they're coming into.
Yeah.
Amy put it was that it's so hard when you come to a city and fall in love with it. And then, you know, years down the road, you look at it again and it's something completely unrecognizable.
Yeah.
So, and I think another thing was that she had had a student of hers like contact her that day and say that they might have to move because they can't afford it anymore. So I don't know. I just thought that was maybe the only talk I could have, or the only event I could have gone to there that would have redeemed that place.
I think it's a really generous gesture actually to not sort of demonize
be like,
the new.
Fuck you, new people, leave the room.
But just to be like, you know, because I think that is sometimes what we're all thinking, but I also feel like that's not going to work out in the long run. So we have to find creative ways to incorporate these new people into the arts community and get them involved and interested and excited about it.
Yeah. And like the community in general.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was my experience at the Battery. I left pretty immediately after that. Riley, who I love, who is a Oakland-based musician, artist, writer, genius, and he has a screenplay out that's being put out by McSweeney's. So if you get McSweeney's, the last issue of McSweeney's, you get their regular like literary magazine or whatever the fuck they are, and then Boots Riley's screenplay is a whole separate little publication, and I haven't finished it yet, but I really love it.
You started reading it?
Oh,
do you have the publication?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
is it Katie out right
got
now?
It for me for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, it's out.
Is it the most
you can get it anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to read it.
It'll be a little confusing because you'll see the front of McSweeney's as usual, but then if you pick it up and turn it over, you'll see it's called Sorry to Bother You by Boots Riley. And the funny thing is, the Coup also has an album called Sorry to Bother You, and I didn't realize, but it says right on the album, this is the soundtrack to a major motion picture.
I think we should interview
I'm going to read it, and then I'll give it to you.
Okay, I was maybe just going to go buy it.
Oh, yeah, do it. Just you buy it too, listener. Let's all buy it and read it together. Okay.
Oh, should we have a reading? Should we do like every week we read like five
Well, we could have a reading, but then we have to do all the characters because it's a screenplay. Can you do voices?
I can try.
No. Okay, moving right along. That'd be weird. Please do that. And then I really want to get Boots on the show.
Yeah.
But they're going to be in Europe. Also, on my continued investigation of art fairs, I went to the Fog Art and Design Fair, which was not a typical art fair at all.
That one actually sounded really interesting to me. I didn't go, but I wish that I had.
A lot of people I talked to that went to it hated it a lot.
Oh, really? Why?
But I thought it was like the most honest art fair because it was art and design. So it's like there's art and like galleries are represented. Like Jessica Silverman was there and Haynes Gallery and a bunch of other galleries. But then also like furniture people and like decor and like we saw a family, like a perfect L.L. Bean family going through carpet swatches.
It's kind of amazing because it is honest in that, you know, art as
furniture. Grab a couch and then
grab
get
a couch,
painting
go
that
get
matches.
A painting. Exactly. God, that's so fucked up and crazy and so real also.
Maysoon, I live in Oakland, which is in the East Bay, as you know. So I spend most of my time there and come to San Francisco mainly to come to your house and to see art shows and to sell comic books. And that's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it.
I know we have tech people over there. Maybe I'm just not going to their enclave, but I had my first close encounter with some tech guys, like the kind that you hear about. You know what I'm saying? On like the Vanishing SF Facebook page, or like in the videos of the fucking Dropbox dudes kicking the kids off the soccer field.
Yeah.
I felt like I walked into a fucking performance piece or something.
It's disgusting.
They're really...
Why aren't they more ashamed of themselves? I don't understand. It's like these people just talking so loudly about the most obnoxious things, and you're kind of like, I swear to you, multiple times I'll turn around on BART or anywhere in a public setting and literally be like, are you seriously talking like that in public? Are you fucking crazy?
As somebody who lives in the Mission, do you have this all the time?
I don't, because I avoid Valencia Street at all costs. I literally walk down Mission Street or Guerrero.
Well, I ran into them going down to the BART station on 16th and Mission.
Right. I think I definitely probably see them more on BART than anywhere. Because that's where I'm like, I have to be on BART.
Why are they just driving their fucking Ferraris everywhere?
I don't know, but tell us what you overheard.
So anyhow, I got these two guys walking down the stairs behind me going down to BART. And in like a theatrical projection voice, like as if it were for a performance, they were bellowing.
Yeah.
Saying, oh man, who'd you bang at the wherever?
Are you sure they were tech dudes?
They were wearing shirts that said tech period sass period and had a Texas flag on it, but I'm not sure what the Texas flag thing, if it had an extra something, because I was kind of trying to keep my distance.
Yeah, because you were like, are these guys dangerous?
But anyhow, he's like, who'd you bang at the place? And the guy's like, oh, I banged Sheila. And the other guy, I changed the names to protect the innocent, but anyhow, and he's like, how was it? And the other guy,
oh, that's so gross.
The other guy was like, oh, well, she was really inexperienced, but I expected that, blah, blah, blah. And it just went on like that.
It's gross. It's gross. I have said this before and people looked at me like I was crazy, but I feel more unsafe walking around the Mission now than I have ever in my 14 fucking years living in San Francisco in the Mission District. And, you know, it's because there's a bunch of, like, beef-neck douchebag dudes, like, groups of dudes walking around all the time, like, saying loud shit like that, which, frankly, as a woman in this country, makes me feel really unsafe.
It's like American Psycho. After this, I got really into checking out whether or not there's a tech bubble, you know? Because do you remember when that Yo app sold for like $1 billion or whatever, the app where you just text Yo, you press a button and it texts Yo to someone. That's all the app does, and it sold for like $1 billion.
So stupid.
I heard about it on Marketplace on NPR with Kai Ryssdal, and he was like, mark my words, there is a tech bubble. This is this cannot be. This shall not stand.
That's what you said?
Kairos yeah, Hall? Basically. I mean, he didn't say it like that, but...
And so why didn't you call them out?
Would you... Oh, God, never. Are you kidding me?
Well, what would happen if you did? This is what I always... This is what always goes through my head. Like, why not just be like, shut the fuck up, you obnoxious assholes?
Because then they were going to yell at me and be really mean.
See, I think people... And that's the problem. I think people want that. Like, they're trying to, like... They're almost, like, egging it on, which is probably why they're talking so loudly. Yes. Just to be obnoxious and to see what happens.
Or just because they don't have any concern for the people around them.
Yeah. Or for the women that they bang. It's fucking obnoxious.
We talk a lot in the art world, though, about how can we tap into this young money. The tech money that's blasting in every direction.
When I hear shit like that, I'm like, fuck them. I don't want their money.
But...
I just can't stand it. I can't stand the idea of, like, kowtowing to some fucking douchebags.
Kowtowing.
Can't deal.
Okay, what are your solutions to this? We gotta work this one out.
Come on, people. Let's talk it out.
Okay. Call in 419-351-6606 or send a flying messenger bird at Pine Tree Podcast. Let us know. Have you had some weird tech experiences? Have you had a tech person come into your gallery studio?
Tell us about your tech experiences, whether or not they're weird, fucked up, fantastic. We want to hear about it. I want to hear about it. I want to hear about the many ways that people have interacted with the new tech.
Maybe they've been great. Maybe they've had a great experience.
Exactly. That's why I want to hear it.
Oh, Lord. So, also, we'll be doing our next ramble.
Next week.
Our next exhibition ramble. So if there's an exhibition that you think we should check out or you think other people should check out, let us know. And we're going to ramble on down the bluegrass lane and let you know what shows and events we're thinking about.
Congratulations.
You've listened to another
episode
taped together with scotch tape and chewing gum of Congratulations Pine Tree.